When your managerial reputation's built on playing pragmatic football with an emphasis on a compact shape and not giving up quality chances, it's probably not a good look to have a 3-1 lead and lose a game 4-3. West Ham's polarising boss David Moyes has a chance to bounce back from that debacle at Newcastle as the Hammers face their bitter foes Tottenham. It's always an emotionally charged derby, but which way will it go and how much damage will it do to the loser? I'm Kevin Hatchard and this is Football Only Better. No losers among my top tipping team for this midweek special, starting with Mark O'Hare. Mark, West Ham were in control at St James's Park, but then Moyes took off Mikel Antonio, brought on Calvin Phillips, and the whole thing went horribly wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel a little bit sorry for David Moyes and West Ham after Saturday, which was a terrific game for the neutrals, but obviously not if you're a Hammers fan. And a couple of contentious decisions go against them. And I actually thought they played pretty well for the most part of that match. And going forward, they were a real threat when the game was in the balance. And you can see the difference since Lucas Paquetá's come back into the team. Just an excellent operator in that role. Antonio led the line reasonably well. And then you've got the likes of Kudus and Bowen playing off you. I mean, that's a really exciting forward line to have at your disposal. But they did look lesser of a side in the middle areas without Alvarez. He's suspended and will be suspended again in midweek. But yeah, I mean, we've said it many, many times now over the past 18 months or so. For all the positives that David Moyes has brought West Ham, there is always that lingering sense of what if, because of his pragmatism, really. And it sort of, I guess you could say, as you've kind of alluded to there in your introduction, that it came back to bite him and West Ham at the weekend. I'm still relatively positive about West Ham kind of going forward. They're having a great season, still in Europe, of course, chasing more silverware. Aguiar could be back in the squad again this midweek, so they're not far off their best 11 being available, bar Alvarez, really. And I think they'll be very, very eager to bounce back and kind of put on a show based off what happened at the weekend, really. And I think a home clash against Spurs should stir the senses a little bit. They've avoided defeat in this home fixture in all of the last three meetings with Spurs since returning to be a top flight team. Obviously beat them away in the reverse. And I think this match, or I think the market, it's just a little bit too skewed really in Tottenham's favour, actually. And West Ham have only lost three home games all season at the London Stadium, two of which were quite convincing against Man City and Arsenal. But those two teams are still a level above Spurs for all that Tottenham have been very, very good this season. Spurs aren't yet at that level. And I think we saw West Ham give Aston Villa a right good game, really, before the international break. Could and should probably have even won that match. And I think stylistically, this isn't a million miles away from that particular game. Spurs and Villa do play in a similar sort of style with the high line and being quite adventurous and attack-minded, really. So I'm going to give West Ham a vote of confidence here. I think the 183 with a half-goal start on the Asian handicap on the exchanges, it's just a bit too big, really. And I think it's almost disrespectful for them as hosts because, you know, obviously Spurs to win is the only way we see this bet bust. And West Ham's decent form in terms of avoiding defeat and getting home results, coinciding with sort of Spurs not being as consistent away from home. They've been unbelievably brilliant in front of goal in terms of getting on the score sheet. But it's actually only 6 wins in 14 away under Postecoglou. So again, that doesn't fill you with confidence if you're going to back a team at 2-1-12 away from home. 5 of those 6 wins came against teams in 13th or below. And look, as I said, they've been great in front of goal. They scored at least twice in 11 of 14 away. They've also conceded at least twice on 9 occasions too. So I did have a look into West Ham's price here to score at least twice, but it's only around the even money mark. So that felt a little bit stingy considering they're 3.25 on the exchange to win the game. So for me, the best alternative was to back the Asian handicap offering. The form line isn't the best for West Ham right now, 2 wins in 11 this calendar year. But, you know, I could also pick out some of Spurs' away performances since Christmas and suggest that they are very gettable. You think of the no-show at Brighton, fortunate to get that 2-2 at Everton, stuffed at Fulham last time out as well. The standout came at Villa when Emery decided to change his whole defensive system and it backfired. So, and then these slow starts as well. do make me a little bit nervous if I'm a punter backing Spurs. I'm not sure how sustainable it is to be giving your opposition leads after sort of 30 seconds, a couple of minutes, really. It's quite often having to rely to battle back into matches. And Postecoglou will say it doesn't really matter when the goals come as long as you get the results. And I understand that, but it's not ideal, really. So I did want to be with goals and potentially cards in this match, but they're quite stingy too. So I'll just back West Ham with a half goal start. I'm always quite amenable to supporting teams immediately after a big, heavy defeat, or perhaps after a loss that came in similar circumstances to Saturday. Depending on the team or the coach and the character of that club, there's always a determination to put things right immediately after. And I think West Ham will be well up for the challenge.
I'm always pleased when I've written a preview for our website, betting.betfair.com, and Mark has a similar idea to me. So well worth reading that on the site. Let's see if Sky Sports' Lewis Jones agrees with us. Lewis, there's an argument to say, isn't there, that if Moyes' reactive style that the fans seem to hate doesn't get results, what's the point?
Yeah. Well, what is the point? It's a very philosophical question there on life, Kev, there. But
What's the point of any of it?
what is the point? But hey, I do feel sorry for West Ham fans actually when you get asked about the David Moyes conundrum, because sort of very confusing situation that even sort of makes my head spin, and I've got no affinity whatsoever with the club about whether Moyes is the man, deserves another season, or should they completely switch it up and get maybe a more progressive manager in. And but you could argue this is the best West Ham have ever had it in their history, really. I mean, and it's Moyes that has taken them there. I mean, the European Cup they won, another quarter final coming up on the horizon. So, a club that sort of is never too far away from a crisis is actually quite stable and thriving at the moment. So, it begs the question: what is the problem? And the problem is the style of football, isn't it? Which is we've obviously referenced a lot. And for me, they just play sort of dinosaur football in an era of sort of high octane. Premier League matches where sort of pressing and fighting fire with fire is the norm. Moyes' teams can be so tedious to watch at times. And that's actually seen through their key metrics for pressing. So they rank bottom for opposition passes allowed per defensive action, which is the PPDA metric. They rank bottom for high turnovers, and they rank the highest for allowing teams to progress the ball up the pitch per phase of play. So that's sort of like indicating how little they want to engage the opposition, and they do sort of decamp into their own half, which can be very, very tough to stomach if you're a season ticket holder, I'm guessing, at West Ham. And so when they lose games like they did at like 6-0 versus Arsenal, they got thumped at Fulham, didn't they? And that maddening collapse at Newcastle, fans aren't very sympathetic, are they? Because of that
No.
style. And when West Ham are bad, they are very, very bad. And I think that's the real issue. And that Newcastle game, I was on duty for Sky actually. I was live blogging it for our digital platforms. And yeah, West Ham, as Mark said, West Ham were brilliant for 60 minutes. I thought they were so comfortable, the front four were causing problems. And even the home fans were starting to turn a little on their team, which doesn't happen often at Sir James's Park, especially under Eddie Howe. So it shows you how comfortable West Ham were. And even the away end, I thought they were bringing out the Olays at 53 minutes while Paqueta and Bowen were bopping the ball around, which probably come back to bite them a little bit. But that's, you don't blame me for that. It was on course to be a really exciting away day, wasn't it? But under that, the first sign of Newcastle pressure, Moyes just went into autopilot, I thought, and sat on the lead instead of sort of utilising West Ham's clear advantage in the final third against what was a makeshift Newcastle defence who were just clearly struggling. He had to say he knows more about football than I ever will, Moyes. But surely attack had to be the best form of defence in that situation. There were at least another couple of goals out there for West Ham, I thought.
He can't do it though, can he? He can't do it. They did it against Villa in the last home game. Could have won that game. And there were long spells where they just said to Villa, "Okay, you have the ball," and it just gives all the momentum away. And I can see why fans go crazy. I mean, I've been one of the ones who've, similar to you, Lewis, have said, "Well, hang on, you've won a major European trophy last season. You're in the quarterfinals again. You're in the top half of the Premier League pushing for Europe again." But then you actually look at some of those games and you think, no, I get this. If I was watching this bilge at home and paying good money for it, I'd be furious as well.
It's just the lack of tactical flexibility, I think, in Moyes' like remit at the moment, which is a very experienced manager, and maybe he could have I don't know, move with the times a little bit and think and seen the how the Premier League has changed over the past sort of 5 or 6 years for the increased in sort of the attacking players, really. The level has just gone up massively. So you can't really sit back and low block teams anymore successfully because every team has got those players that can hurt you. And the decision to bring on Calvin Phillips was bizarre for me.
Horrendous.
Yeah, bizarre. I mean, the fact he brought him on for Antonio, then moved Paqueta up front was even more maddening for me. And I just to remove Antonio and put Paqueta up front to run channels, I just think it's a scandal. He should have been playing. He's your best ball player. To keep him in central areas where he's gonna sort of dictate attacks and help you get up the pitch. So yeah, and obviously then Phillips gave away the penalty, which turned about to be the key moment for the comeback. And it's not going great for poor Calvin at the moment, is it? It's
No.
so he made an error, didn't he, on his debut after 3 minutes. He was sent off in the 2-0 defeat at Forest. And obviously his introduction here was a catalyst for Newcastle to come back into the game. And he's now 4-1 to make the England squad. I think he was heavily odds on only a couple of months ago. And you could probably make that 400-1. And it still wouldn't be of interest to anyone, I don't think. And to make matters worse, he was filmed swearing at West Ham fans, wasn't he, getting back on the bus. So that's going to be interesting to see what reception he gets on Tuesday. But it does give him an excuse to use one of my favourite quotes of the season, which was picked up from a West Ham fan channel. And this chap said, "We thought we signed the Yorkshire Perlow, but we've signed a Yorkshire pudding." So I've been waiting all season to get that out. So
Oh,
finally, I've
bless
had.
poor Calvin. Bless him.
Yes, I know. But
Bless
yeah,
him.
he's obviously a fine player and can get back to his best. Maybe he just needs to go find Marcelo Bielsa again and latch onto him when he comes back into club management. But yeah, West Ham just became redundant as attacking force in that game at Newcastle. I thought they just sort of sank without a trace. So it does. I just can't trust. Looking ahead to this game, I can't trust West Ham really. Even I'm not too sweet on Tottenham either this season. To a certain extent, I think their metrics aren't as strong as maybe what people believe. And these slow starts really do sort of worry me. But they can just turn it on at any time and score two or three goals in a short period, can't they? And West Ham do have a habit of collapsing in games, so I'm going to stay clear of the outright market and just concentrate on goals, I think, so it should be a really good game. And I do think there is a good chance of West Ham scoring one or two, maybe even three goals against Spurs, because that front four of Paqueta, Kudos, Bowen and Antonio are really purring right now, I think. And since Paqueta returned from injury, they've scored 18 goals in 7 matches, and they carry such a threat on the break. And the Brazilian, I just think he's playing well below his level. He should be a top four club for me. He's the man that knits it all together, and he's got everything really. Physicality, can pick a pass, can put his foot in where he needs to. He's just class. So and that's bore out in the with and without stats with Paqueta and without Paqueta. So since the start of last season, which is a 68 game sample size, West Ham have scored 1.7 goals per 90 minutes with him in the side and 0.6 without him. So that means his influence is responsible for over a goal a game, which in a low scoring sport like football is absolutely massive. So yeah, I'm keen on following him in here for this game against Spurs. Quite liked his 15-8 price on the sports book to score or assist, which is a bet which has landed in the last three of his last four games. And I just think he looks in the current mood to continue that form in a game which should be really goal heavy. Wouldn't put people off the game to go really to go quite frenzied in the goal department as well. So over 5.5 goals is 6-1, and over 6.5 goals are 11-1. They're not official plays from me, but definitely worth factoring in. But I'll be keeping it simple and just backing Paqueta to score or assist.
Now, we know injury time goals can be a pain in the pocket if they ruin your bets, and now you've got a 90-minute payout to rescue you. If the clock hits 90 minutes and you've got the right result as it stands, your bet wins when the match ticks into injury time. T's and C's in the description. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. Let's take it to Forest against Fulham, Mark. Fulham with that crazy comeback against Sheffield United. Forest, a confusing team, aren't they? Because you look at the quality they have, you feel like they should be doing better than they are, but Nuno hasn't given them that uplift we thought that maybe he would.
No, he hasn't. I think I saw the numbers actually since he's been appointed. They're averaging 0.92 points per game. And under Steve Cooper, it was 0.88 points per game. And obviously, that includes the immediate kind of uplift Forest had under Nuno, where they picked up a couple of positive points. The new manager bounce, if you like, but since it's been a bit of a malaise really around the City ground. But I'm hopeful this could be, I wouldn't say massively entertaining, but I think there will be goals in this game. Bar that kind of snooze fest at the Etihad on Sunday, it was actually a very positive weekend for the Premier League in terms of goals per game output yet again. The average for the season is now up at 3.24. 65% of games in the Premier League have seen over 2.5 goals. 62% have seen BTTS bank, including 8 of 10 over the Easter weekends. And that's what I'm going to look at here, because I think whenever both teams to score is priced up around the 8 to 11 mark, 173 or bigger in the Premier League this season, it has to be worth a second look, because that 62% hit rate across the whole of the Premier League for BTTS implies kind of blanket odds of around about 8 to 13, 162 if you looked at an average game based on that hit rate. But 173 or bigger, first of all, you have to have a look because it's bigger than the average. But if you look in sort of further detail and you consider the circumstances, Forest embroiled in the relegation battle, desperate for points, desperate for positive results. The points penalties and the appeals mean they just don't really know yet what they need to survive. So you just have to go out and try and win football matches and see what else happens elsewhere. But yeah, I think they have been adopting as attacking a mindset as Nuno will allow them to be. And as you say, they've got plenty of attacking quality in that squad. Draws aren't a help here, so they have to be proactive under Nuno. And they have actually been scoring fairly freely. They've scored in 11 of the last 13. At the City ground, they've scored in 12 of 15. However, they have only recorded 2 home clean sheets all season, and that's led to 10 both teams to score winners in 15 in front of their own supporters. That's a 67% hit rate, which is above the league average, which again just encourages you to assume that BTTS here is a value price. But I think the prospects for both sides to oblige do improve when you look at Fulham as well in terms of the opposition, because this surprised me actually. But since the New Year card, only 5 teams have won more points than Fulham in the Premier League. They put in some very memorable efforts during that sample, but the bulk of which have been done at Craven Cottage. Saturday wasn't a high point for them, having to scrape a point when they could and probably should have been 4-1 down. They dominated the first half at Bramall Lane, but didn't get the desserts really. But the second half was a bit of a mess really from a Fulham perspective. And yeah, I'm expecting a lot of people to be saying from now, or at least for the next couple of weeks, that Fulham have nothing to play for. They're on the beach. I actually disagree right now, because they're still in with an outside chance of Europa Conference League qualification. And I think that would be a real asset. I know Marco Silva's talking about kind of finishing as high as they possibly can and seeing what can be achieved. And as it stands, finishing seventh would be enough to qualify. They're only 5 points off West Ham in seventh. So, it's not like they're a million miles away from it. So I think they will take a kind of freewheeling approach to this match and from here on in. So they've clearly got players of quality. Rodrigo Muniz is just in
Oh,
unbelievable form.
amazing.
It's
Absolutely amazing.
exceptional. I can't think of a player who's made such an impact in such a short space of time. Who's, I wouldn't say he's come from nowhere, but he wasn't really in consideration for the first couple of months of the
He
campaign. And
couldn't
then
get a
so,
game at Borough, could he?
no, Raúl Jiménez gets injured and he's kind of thrust in. He's just been a revelation, really. And so far, Fulham have been as well, because they've scored at least twice in 6 of the last 8 games. They scored 3 or more goals in 4 of those 8 games as well. So they know where the back of the net is, but away from home, they haven't kept a clean sheet on their travels since September. So you put that alongside Forest's plight, their own sort of raw numbers in terms of both boxes. And I think both teams to score is a big runner here. So, I'm not going to get too excited about the price of 173 on the exchange, but I will get excited about the even money offering for both teams to score and both teams to be carded. One of my favourite bets, as I said in previous shows in the Premier League this season, it's a fantastic leap from that 173 to get to even money. Forest have been carded in 97% of games this season, Fulham in 90%. And I just think that leap is too big, really, for we not really asking a huge amount in what's been a very goal and card heavy Premier League season.
Everton lost again at the weekend, beaten at Bournemouth. A bit unlucky to not get what I thought was a clear penalty at 0-0, but that's the kind of thing that's been happening to them all season long. Lewis, they go to Newcastle. Newcastle might be playing us three in their starting 11 the way things are going. How do you see this turning out? Because Everton are so confusing. You look at Manchester United, for example, who we'll come on to later. They seem to defy their dreadful data, whereas Everton are the other way around. They've got some quite decent data at times, and yet the results are hopeless.
Yeah, and it's that underlying the underlying metrics for everyone that keep sort of luring me in these types of games. I do think they're going to end this winless run at some point. I need to make sure I'm on them when that happens. But yeah, you referenced there, didn't you, the Newcastle injury issues. Just going to read you out a starting 11, which they could field in theory. So we've got Pope in goal, Trippier, Botman, Lascelles, Livramento, Joe Linton, Tonali, Lewis Miley, Almiron, Gordon, and Wilson. And they're
It's a
all
hell of a
missing.
team.
Hell of a team. Probably would finish top 10 in the Premier League, I'd argue. And they
Yeah.
are all unavailable for Tuesday's game, which I'm not sure I've seen anything like that before, when an actual first 11 are all unavailable. I'd say I was live blogging the game against West Ham, and they were just falling like dropping like flies, wasn't they? Livramento, Lascelles, Almiron came on and then had to be replaced. It's just absolutely bizarre, the sort of mix of bad luck and maybe the obvious issues with the sports science department at
Yeah.
Newcastle. Something's gone on this season there with the extra amount of games. But to lose that many players to injury on a consistent basis is
The Livramento
that's
one was
terrible, isn't
quite
it?
funny, though, I thought, because he
Not
just gets the ball.
for Portino, surely, but yeah, I know what you
No,
mean.
I know, but just have the ball
Mark
belted and
O'Hare
twist your
delighted
ankle.
by injury.
When your luck's down, that's the kind of thing that happens. But
Yes,
that
that's
one
true.
did make me laugh a little bit.
Someone that
Got a
suffers
nice
with
little insight into Mark's psyche there.
someone that suffers with ankle ligament problems, I'm not going to comment on that, Mark, because that's actually riled me up, that, to think you were laughing at someone's misfortune. I can't believe it. Okay, right. So where are we then? So we're looking at their price, Newcastle, to win the game is 5-6 with that many players missing. It's one I'd want to stay clear of, even though they did play quite well in the last 20 minutes against West Ham. But I think that was more to do with West Ham just allowing them back in the game because for large parts of that match, they did look like the Newcastle which we've seen for the last 10 games, which has been very sort of mediocre. And maybe the fact the price is bordering on even money is the fact that the current state that Everton find themselves in, maybe because they're currently on a run of 12 games now without a win after that defeat at Bournemouth. And if they don't win this game, it will break a club record for games without a win, which is they're not playing that badly, I don't think. And it was really grim viewing that Seamus Coleman own goal for me personally. So I was on the Everton double chance and under 3.5. We looked to be landing after the Beto late equaliser, but that goal, I mean, it's just comical from Coleman. I'm not sure what
Yeah.
he was doing. So yeah, a little bit stung by that. But as you mentioned, they played quite well in the game. It's just more of the same, really, from Everton. They sort of defended quite well for large parts against a very dangerous attack in Bournemouth. And it was only that sort of one chance they allowed Solanke, which he gobbled up with a player. His sort of ruthlessness in front of goal does at the moment. He's in great form. Well, yet again, Everton got into great positions, didn't they, without really troubling Bournemouth. And the goal was a little bit presented to them by an error from the goalkeeper. So I can foresee a similar type of sort of close encounter at the St James's Park. So I do think Everton can be competitive, and I'm gonna side with them again here to get a result on the double chance, and rinse and repeat the same bet from the weekend on the Bet Builder. So Everton double chance and under 3.5 goals, which actually comes out at 6-4, which I thought was a little bit too big, I think. So we definitely have to gobble that one up. So last 10 away games for Everton have gone under 3.5 goals. Fair enough. Newcastle's games are sort of absolutely crazy for goals, with 10 of their last 15 seeing over 3.5 to land, and the overall total match goal line average is 4.33 per game at the moment. But Everton sort of very good at 10. They sort of tend to drag the goal line down considerably when they play these teams. So, and I'm not sure if you've watched. You're a Family Guy fan, Kev?
Yes,
Yes,
absolutely.
they remind me actually of a character from Family Guy called Buzz Killington, who sort of turns up to parties where everyone's having a wild time with their
Yes.
tops off, and all he does is want to sit down and talk about a bridge or get out his coin collection. So I think, yeah, Everton are sort of the Buzz Killington of the Premier League, I think, and
Wonderful.
they can be responsible for another sort of low scoring game that swims against the market. So yeah, I'm happy to row in here again with Everton on double chance and under 3.5 goals.
Mark, is that a popular culture reference you get?
I've heard of it, and I can certainly understand the analogy, but no, I've never watched that show, and I never will.
Something very comforting about the fact that I knew Mark wouldn't have a clue what that was. Let's move on to something he does have a clue about. Bournemouth against Palace. I think Bournemouth can legitimately say now that it's been a success bringing in Antonio Raiola. I think we were all confident that that was going to be the case, even though I can understand why maybe there was a bit of trepidation about just jettisoning Gary O'Neill. They're up against Palace. And I think similarly, in the fullness of time, Palace will realise it was a good thing to appoint Oliver Glasner. So, two teams should be in a good place going forward.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also relatively common knowledge amongst bettors that the market can be quite slow in adapting to certain events. For example, a managerial change, and that's because there's often no hard data or long-term data on that team under the new man. So the market largely bases lines and prices off the previous regime and can be quite slow to adapt. And I think we get an instance like that with Crystal Palace at the minute, who've been under the guidance of an arch pragmatist of Roy Hodgson for the most part of the season. And Palace have been fairly turgid for the most part. And obviously the goal lines go quite low when whenever he was in charge. But Oliver Glasner's taken over. He's a much more expressive coach, one who is quite adaptable to challenges as well. Yet the market lines and prices haven't really shifted enormously since that appointment. The market is still treating Crystal Palace as kind of Roy Hodgson's team for the most part. And that was the case last weekend when Palace went to Forest, and it's been the case again this midweek too. So, in terms of the market not really shifting to the idea that Palace might be a little bit more fluent, a little bit more forward thinking and proactive, I think there's definitely a case to get with goals in their games whilst it's quite slow to react. And I think that's the case in midweek, and it's actually bolstered by the raw data, which is really, really strong from a Palace perspective. Surprisingly so, actually. They've scored in 23 of 29 league games this season, and they've scored in 13 of 15 away from home. They've also scored in 18 of the last 20 Premier League games across all venues. So they've had a really good knack of getting on the score sheet for quite some time, despite various stages missing Eze, Elise, and various others too. And Eze is obviously fit, available, leading the fight. There's talk that Michael Elise will be back in the squad, probably not starting in midweek, but he's back and available again. Another enormous boost for Glasner too. So I like the idea of Palace going to Bournemouth and getting on the score sheet again and causing a problem. The issue they have at the moment is defensively. The prospect of keeping a clean sheet looks bleak. They've managed only two since October's international break, still without Guehi and Doucouré, two sort of giants really down the foundation of that team. And I think it's probably quite a tall order to try and keep this Bournemouth team quiet. The Cherries are in decent form results-wise, and they've just got a great knack of beating the teams below them and beating them quite well. So they've scored at least twice in gaining 10 points from the last four games, all against the bottom three, really, and Everton. And their only blanks, Bournemouth, this is since October's international break, have come against Liverpool and Man City, which is kind of understandable, really. So the issue for they as well is clean sheets, just one in 11. All five of their home fixtures against teams below them this season have seen both teams scoring. And both Luton and Sheffield United have both come here recently and scored at least twice against the Cherries. So no reason why Palace can't do similar. So yeah, the bet is very similar to what I've just suggested with Forest and Fulham, both teams to score, which is 174 on the exchange. And I'm going to boost it to evens again by backing both teams to collect a card.
Moving on to Brentford against Brighton. Lewis, this is a really interesting one because Brighton obviously got that early goal against Liverpool and it felt like the worst thing they could possibly do because that really angered Liverpool and they were relentless from that moment on. Although Brighton did keep creating opportunities, thought Odingra played pretty well. But it does seem like they're on the slide. Brentford's results have not been great, but they were excellent against Manchester United. So they're both puzzles for us.
Yeah, it's the football betting guru derby, this one, isn't it? The owners, Tony Bloom and Matthew Benham, both made their fortunes, didn't they, beating the betting
That's
markets and
right.
using ahead of their time models to sort of like, yeah, create two of the best run football empires in the world, I'd now argue. And they're sort of inspirational figures, those two. Got so much respect for them both, have helped sort of change the landscape of football as we know it, I think. So always really intriguing to sort of comment on their games, I think, Brentford play Brighton. And I think there might be a bit of a gamble developing actually on the chances of Brentford winning this one. And I definitely want to jump on board. There's so I checked the Betfair exchange yesterday. There's been a bit of movement on the last 24 hours on Brentford's price. They've been cutting from 2.8 to 2.5. And looking at the liquidity on the market, quite a few quid was matched on them at 2.6. So that's quite unusual to see that type of money get matched almost 3 days before a game. It probably comes after their performance at Man, obviously against Manchester United. So the early signs are that this might be a price which continues to move the closer we get to kickoff. So yeah, I definitely want to get on board, and I can definitely see why the smart money is potentially coming for a home win here. I mean, Brentford against Manchester United, wow, hit the woodwork four times, didn't they? Saw a goal disallowed, 31 attempts on goal, 85 touches in the United penalty box. I'm sure we'll get onto that when we discuss United in a moment. But yeah, and I just think a club like Brentford, who are so sort of guided by the underlying numbers behind their performances, that game will have felt like they won 7-0, I think, because it was such a battering on the metrics. And even though it finished 1-1, I do think confidence levels and just general morale be bouncing now, and Thomas Frank will be getting his message across that way of playing with Tony and Bueno back in the team is going to make them a really tough team to beat again at home. And they didn't play like a team that have only got one win in 10 now, have they? And I think they're just a perfect example of how a league table can lie, even at this
Yes.
stage of the season, with as I mentioned, Tony and Mbeumo back now at the forefront. And I'm absolutely convinced they're in a false position in 15th place. And if you look at the expected goal difference calculations, which is calculated by subtracting a team's expected goals against from their expected goals for, they've actually been the ninth best team in the Premier League this season, according to that. And I think that's why there's never been any panic at Brentford this season. The underlying numbers have been strong more or less throughout, and now they've got their two best players back in attack, and I'm sure those chances that they're creating are going to be taken soon enough. And I think they're definitely a team to follow in the coming weeks between now and the end of the season, especially at home. And that's what I'm going to be doing here. And I just think a repeat of the same level of in sort of intensity and attacking threat will be too much for Brighton. Actually, they've just won once away from home in their last nine matches, and that came at Sheffield United. And you mentioned their performance at Liverpool, which I thought was, yeah, I think they played as I thought as expected, really. They showed a lot of confidence and bravery at times. Sort of De Zerbi's football just shone through as they beat the press. But didn't really think they troubled Liverpool that much, barring Danny Welbeck's stunning goal. I mean, it was just 0.44 worth of expected goals, and that sort of backed up my sort of the eye test really on how Brighton played quite well until they got near the area. And
Yeah,
I
they had
do
good
think that,
positions and didn't make
yeah.
best use of them, did they?
It's
Really?
exactly that, and I think that's been the case for a while now. I do think the confidence is low with the front players, and they're missing Matoma, they're missing March. João Pedro, he's borderline being fit again, isn't he? So he'll have an impact. But yeah, and their lack of confidence in front of goal just sort of is bore out by the fact they've only scored more than once in just three of their last 14 games, and scored just a total of 19 goals in those 14 games, and five of those came against Sheffield United, who had 10 men for the whole match, really. So in that period, they're the joint fourth lowest scorers in the Premier League. Only Burnley, Sheffield United, and Everton have actually scored fewer. So again, with the lack of threat in forward areas, and the fact that Brentford should be bouncing after that brilliant performance against Manchester United, yeah, I'm very happy to get involved with the 2.6 price on the exchange, with the hope that it might shorten before kickoff, so you can open up a bit of a trading position there. And even if you wanted to let it run, I think it hopefully you'll come home a winner as well. So yeah, I'm very much siding with Brentford in this one, Kev.
Well, if you want to be notified every time a new episode of Football Only Better goes live, make sure you follow wherever you get your podcasts. And for the YouTube version, make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new channel for non-racing content. Two misfiring giants go toe-to-toe on Thursday as Chelsea face Manchester United. Mark, United hopeless again against Brentford, but they nearly won it. Chelsea against Burnley at the weekend. There's just an overall lack of aggression, physicality, any kind of spark from Chelsea at all. They've got lots of lovely players, no doubt about it, some of the best young talents around. And yet, they just can't put it together at all.
Yeah, it's a stranger on this one. I mean, results-wise, I'd run a mile from this match. If I could oppose both teams, I absolutely would.
Yeah.
Chelsea, the reasonable favourites and rated the stronger side purely due to their far superior performance data, but they've produced some quite encouraging numbers throughout the season and been unable to put anything consistent together. Obviously, we've seen on occasions how good they potentially can be going to the Etihad and going toe-to-toe with Man City, but then at the weekend, I mean, 33 shots, but conceding 18 at home to Burnley, and and failing to beat 10 men for an hour or so.
It's pathetic, isn't it, really? It's
it is. Horrendous, really. And look, they're scoring goals. They've notched at least twice in seven of the last 10 since Christmas. It just so happens that they've also managed just two clean sheets since early October. So kind of epitomises the inconsistency you're getting with Chelsea at the minute and makes them very difficult to trust, and I have little confidence in them. But we're talking relatively early in the week, and this match is taking place on Thursday, so a full range of markets aren't quite available to really push a specific play on this game. But I can sort of tell you where I'll be heading ahead of Thursday, and that will be a bet based around Chelsea's shots and or Chelsea's corners, potentially in a bet builder if I can combine the two, or if the single prices are good enough, I'll be getting involved. Because for all Chelsea's kind of inconsistency, the flip side is they're facing a Man United side who, I'm sick of saying the same stuff over and over again, but they're just a complete calamity. And it's beggars belief that they're sitting in sixth at the minute. I saw their FA Cup win over Liverpool being described as potentially Eric Ten Hag's Mark Robbins moment, and sort of to take people back. That was Man United, Sir Alex Ferguson under huge pressure, playing Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup. It was said to be his last stand, basically. And United beat Forest in the last minute with an academy product, Mark Robbins scoring the winning goal, and the rest, they say, is history. Obviously, against Liverpool, Ten Hag under huge pressure, Diallo, an academy product, comes off and scores the winner in a dramatic win. But clearly, the international break doesn't allow you to sort of carry that momentum on. But if the Saturday night match against Brentford was supposed to be a continuation of what we saw, it was absolutely pitiful from United, really. Just an enormous pin going in any sort of balloon that could have been sort of blown after that Liverpool game. And results-wise, they have improved in 2024, but they just remain completely unconvincing. And they're just not playing like a side who've turned a corner or playing in a sustainable manner at the minute. And totally dominated on Saturday, more so probably than the 4-0 defeat they suffered at Brentford a year earlier. And the numbers are astonishingly bad. And I'm sure Lewis has got plenty up his sleeve, and there's so many you could pick and choose from to sort of highlight here. So I'll just do a couple, really. But in the last seven Premier League games, so I've excluded the FA Cup, in those seven games, they've conceded 165 shots.
Oh my God.
Tallies of 22, 23, 22, 17, 27, 23, 31. So in six of those seven games, they've allowed at least 22 shots. In this calendar year, they've played nine Premier League matches and conceded at least 16 shots in each match, as well as an average of 2.05 expected goals. And if you look at the corners they've allowed in that same sample, 89. That's 13, 4, 8, 10, 8, 9, 15, 8, 14. So a minimum of eight corners conceded in eight of the last nine Premier League games. Now, these are sort of the numbers which you associate with the worst team in the league. And I mean the worst team, the Sheffield United, the Derby Counties of yesteryear. It's astonishingly bad, really. Now, I've seen Chelsea's corner line has been set around the 5.5 mark, which is already something which would give you great encouragement to back. But I'd be looking to potentially get a bigger price by combining, say, Chelsea to win five or more corners and Chelsea to have 15 or more shots. Something around that mark you should be able to get odds against by combining the two. You know, quite often those two markets are linked. You know, the more shots you take, the more likely you are to win corners. And Chelsea have won at least six corners in half of their overall Premier League games this season. And at home, they're averaging around 15 shots per game. So we're only really after asking Chelsea to perform to average across the whole campaign, whereas Man United's recent form and their season-long numbers suggest that they're way, way below the league average. So should have a chance of landing either or potentially both.
Yeah, Lewis, it's beyond belief, isn't it, really, what United have been producing? We've said this for the whole of the season. I mean, I think generally we were fairly positive about Ten Hag and United after that first season. You felt like they'd made some steps. You'd had to make some tactical compromises, yes, but you felt like it was going to go somewhere. This has been a horror show from start to finish.
Yeah, it has. And I sort of felt strangely content that finally the flaws in this Manchester United team had been so alarmingly exposed on Saturday. It's sort of great to see all the underlying like performance data, like the shots faced, corners faced, touches in the box conceded. So it was being discussed across like the media. I just think it was a performance that would be hard to forget for everyone associated with the club, I think. And yeah, they played with their usual sort of misshapen structure without the ball, but they sort of threw sort of a lack of work ethic into the mix as well, which made them just go from probably the third worst team in the league to the worst team in the league, if you throw in a lack of effort and desire into the mix as well with the underlying process. So it was just, yeah, I just don't think there's any way back now for Ten Hag after that. I mean, even the players look like it after for large parts of the game. I think to the lack of intensity and the lack of just desire to run was just baffling, absolutely baffling. And the new hierarchy at United are sort of very analytically aware, I think, and they're recruiting people into positions like sort of Dan Ashworth and people like that who will want to make the big decisions based on key members of staff, based on, I think, data analysis. So I think that leaves Ten Hag very vulnerable when they continue to post, okay results, but the underlying process is just worrying beyond belief for where they want to go as a football club. I think we have to fade Manchester United at Chelsea on Thursday. I think that's quite an obvious play to go with. And as Mark has outlined there, I just encourage punters when the markets are properly formed on Betfair to have a good look at the shots and corners. There's bound to be, I mean, Mark just mentioned there, the corner line set of 5.5, that immediately pricked my ears with attention and stuff. So there's definitely going to be value to be had across those markets when they're formed. And Brentford, just an example, Brentford's corner line was set at 6 on Saturday, at even money across the board. And they won 14, which would have been about 100-1, I think, if you could have got 14 or more corners for Brentford to win. So this is the sort of levels that the market still isn't reacting to this Manchester United data. And Chelsea are good enough and show enough attacking intent to deliver on these shots and corners lines, I think. And I know the result against Burnley it looks awful on paper. I mean, 10 men against Burnley. 10 men for Burnley and 2-2 draw. But Chelsea did put up another monstrous attacking showing that they were very unfortunate to lose the game based on their metrics. It was actually the second highest expected goals total a team have put up this season. It was only better. That was, what was it, 4.32, I think it was. And it's been only bettered by Liverpool's 7.11 against Newcastle, which still blows my mind. How can a team rack up 7.11 expected goals in a match? That's just absolutely incredible. And Chelsea had 33 shots in the match as well. So again, that's the second highest of any team in the league this season. So there was enough. They did enough right in the game to win the game, probably 4-2, 5-2, in my opinion. So I'm not going to be too down on that one result. So I do think they've been moving in the right direction over the past few weeks, and I'm going to continue to take that angle on them. And they've scored 2 or more goals in 8 of their last 10 matches. And the only 2 games they failed to score 2 or more was against Man City and Liverpool. So even though they completely fluffed their lines against Burnley, I do think the longer term data of late suggests that they're actually okay in front of goal at the moment. So, and the man at the heart of the goal rush has been Cole Palmer, hasn't he? Who scored 5 in his last 9 starts. And I just think he looks so confident and ruthless in front of goal at the moment. And really, he's going to have a really good career in the Premier League, I think, because he's got that coolness in front of goal that should lead him to score. If he plays at a club that, I don't know, can challenge for major honours over the next 10 years, I think he'll score more than 100 Premier League goals, I think, because he is just actually so cool, calm and collected in front of goal. I really think he's going to have a really successful Premier League career. And he's actually a bigger price to score any time at 8-5 than for Chelsea to win the game. And when I was weighing the two angles up, I'd rather just back Palmer to score at any time than trust Chelsea to deliver. They've failed to deliver for punters 11 times this season at home when going off odds on. So that's 11 times they've been beaten at odds on, which is an incredible figure, really. And that includes when 1.37 to Nottingham Forest and 1.28 against Burnley as well. So I just think it seems sensible to trust Palmer at 8-5 rather than chancing Chelsea around even money. So yeah, I'm going to be backing Palmer to score any time, and obviously we'll be having a good old look at the shots and corner markets for Chelsea.
Well, that's all we have time for on this edition of Football Only Better. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Remember, this is a special midweek show, so we'll have all our normal weekend previews later in the week. Remember, all of our shows now on YouTube, so make sure you like and subscribe to Betfair's new non-racing channel on YouTube. Loads of good Premier League previews on our website, betting.betfair.com. I've written the West Ham Spurs preview. I'm delighted to say that the guys are on similar lines to me. I've got Lucas Paquetá to be booked in that one because he is a walking yellow card at the moment. Booked in both of his internationals for Brazil in the international break. From Mark, from Lewis and from me, it's goodbye for now.